पंचकपचूरश्च कृपसिन्धुभयेभ्यश्च कृपितनं भवनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः। Kumaras welcomed the Lord. Excuse me. Prithu Maharaj welcomed the Kumaras when they appeared at the sacrificial arena, as per the prediction or the blessing of the Lord. And Prithu Maharaj, as part of the welcoming of these great saintly personalities, he inquired from them about how one who is materialistic, entangled in material life, which is such a dangerous thing. Why is it dangerous? Because it leads to further deaths and births and deaths and births in various different species of life. Samsara, this cycle of birth and death, is bhavana, is like a forest fire. So how can one who is entangled in material life, how could he advance in Krishna consciousness and advance rapidly towards the goal of freedom from the cycle of birth and death, and ultimately towards the lotus feet of Krishna in Goloka Vrindavan? So Sanat Kumara began to reply to the honest inquiry of Prithu Maharaj. And we're going to go over very briefly the progression of the verses until the present, and we'll begin on 29 today. We'll try to be brief. So, the first thing in text 20, Sanat Kumar glorified Prithu Maharaj. Why? What is glorious about a king? Well, think about it. What is glorious about a king from the point of view of a saintly person? The king has so many qualities. That is, beck and call, there are the armies, the treasury, the kitchen, his power to control, so many things. But what does a saintly person, especially exalted saintly persons like the Kumaras, what do they see glorious? What do they glorify in this king? They glorify that he has an inclination to Krishna, Matirna Krishna Paratakshatova. This inclination to Krishna is the rarest thing. Attachment to Krishna is the rarest thing in the material world. It's like honesty in the prison. Who in the prison is honest? Who in the material world is attached to Krishna? Everyone in the material world is attached to their personal petty pleasures. So he said, this attachment, they glorify him, this attachment is very difficult to achieve. And when one has this unflinching faith, faith, shraddha, the word also means respect, faith or respect, veneration. So such veneration coming from the attachment, it automatically cleanses the material desires from the heart. Kshayanam. Then, therefore, he says, the Shastras all conclude that the goal for all of human society is to, on one hand, the detachment from this material concept of life. This body is our body, we identify as ourselves, and it's the embodiment of our Material desires, because it, according to our material desires, we have received this specific type of body. So the conclusion of Shastra is that we should get rid of this attachment to this body, and on the other hand, as you have done, Preeti Maharaj, gain attachment for the Supreme Lord. Because if we're attached to Him who is transcendental, to He who is transcendental and beyond the modes of material nature, as the Lord is, then by that attachment, we will be also transcendental. We will cleanse our heart, and we will also become transcendental beyond the modes of material nature. So how, then the question naturally comes, how to increase our attachment to Krishna? Because that will bring us from the shackles, the bars, the prison of the material world. So how can we increase our attachment to Krishna? By practicing devotional service, it continues. By inquiring about the Supreme Personality of Godhead. By applying the principles of bhakti yoga in our life. That means, in my life, how will I act? I will act not for the pleasure, what I think will make me happy, but I'll act in the way that Krishna will be pleased. And by worshipping Krishna, by hearing and chanting the glories of the Lord. These activities, they have potency in and of themselves. They are very, very potent in and of themselves to bring about purification of the heart. So, continuing, how to make this advancement. Do not associate with persons who are attached to sense gratification. Contrary to associating with them, one should mold his life in such a way that he cannot live in peace without drinking the nectar of the glorification of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In other words, develop that attachment to such a degree that one depends, it is the nectar of one's life, the sustenance of one's life, that one hears about the Lord. And at the same time, one should become disgusted with the taste for sense enjoyment. And that's 23, 24. Some more principles of making advancement. That is the basic principles, but yet there are subsidiary principles. One must be non-violent, follow the graded charges, always remember the nectar of the pastimes of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, follow the regulative principles without material desires, not blaspheme others, lead a very simple life, be tolerant. The material world is full of duality and disturbances. If one becomes upset every time there's a disturbance, one will continuously be upset in this world. So one has to tolerate. The very nature of the material world is tossing and turning, like the waves on an ocean. The very nature. So at the very beginning of spiritual life, one has to become fixed in toleration. Comes and teaches. Agamapayano anityas. They come and they go. Why don't you tolerate the duality of opposing elements in the material world? And gradually increase his devotional service. How? As this process, what is the essence of the process? Again, constantly hearing of the transcendental qualities of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. These pastimes are like ornamental decorations on the ears of devotees. What does that mean? That the devotees always decorate their ears like an ornament. An earring decorates people's ears. So the pastimes of the Lord should be so intimately connected, always present in our ear. Just like when one wears an earring, no matter where one goes, one takes one's earring with him. Or her, or him, after all. So by rendering, by having this ornament of devotional service always present, or chant, or hearing about Krishna, always present upon the ears and rendering devotional service, one can become fixed in transcendence. That means the fixed in our relationship with Krishna. This is the cost, the price. So then what is the result of that? All the material contaminations that cover our heart and keep us in the material world, they are burnt to ashes, just like fire burns the wood itself from which it springs to ashes. And then, when the material desires covering the heart are burnt, or we are separated from them, then one becomes liberated. And there is no difference between the soul and the super soul, in the sense as of the desire of the super soul. Tva ima purusha loke chara akshara eva cha chara sarvabhutani kutosto akshara uchite. Becomes one with the super soul in desire. Right now we have an opposite desire to God. He wants us to serve Him, and we want Him to serve us at best. Rather, we want to be the center. So when we accept that our constitutional position, when the impurity is gone from the heart, and we are ornamented always with our attachment to Krishna, then this false ego disappears, and one loves Krishna, and one gives up his false position. Just like there is no longer a distinction between the dream and the dreamer. It was given in the verse. The bodily concept of life goes. And it is just, in text 28, it is just those material desires that are keeping us within the material world, and they give us upadhi, or designations, like coverings, identities, false identities. Actually, jivera surupoi Krishna nityadas. Our real identity, our real ego, is that we are Krishna's servants. This is who we are. But our false ego is so many different upadhis, or designations. So many things connected to the body. What's an example of an upadhi connected to the body? Or mind, or any. What's an example? Very deep. What's an example? Huh? Yeah, I am a member of this family. I am, and we don't think I am a member of this family. We think I am a father, or a mother, or a child. That's the upadhi. What's another upadhi? A covering, an identity that covers something we think we are, that covers our actual identity. I am a Perth. I come from WA, Western Australia. Identity, or a country, or from the south, or the north, or I am intelligent, or I am foolish, or I am a man, or I am a woman, or I am this, or I am that. So many upadhi, sab upadhi vinyam of dham. This is devotional service, we get rid of them all. So the result of all these desires, before they're burnt up, all the desires for sense gratification, is that the soul who is eternal and is Krishna becomes subjected to designations. Subjected means we enjoy and suffer according to the designation. So when one, on the other hand, is free from all the designations, he has no other interest other than serving the Lord. And in text 29. Nimitte sati sarvatra jaladava piparusha atmanascha parasyati vidam pasyati nanyada. Only because of different causes does a person see a difference between himself and others. Just as one sees the reflection of a body appearing differently manifested on water, on oil, or in a mirror. So there are external causes when we see that we look at another soul who's trapped in a body. We look at the externals and we see ourselves, oh, he's not like me. He's got four legs and I have two or whatever. I have long hair, short hair, he's black, I'm white. So many different designations. So it's because of these different designative causes that one sees himself as different from others. But actually we are the same as everyone else. We are souls, same in that sense. We are all individuals, but we are souls. Here's Prabhupada's purport. The spirit soul is one. This is describing our natural consciousness. There's a natural affinity. And this is also described by Kapila Muni, that if we think of ourselves devotees, but we only worship Krishna, but don't respect other living entities, this is very low class devotion. Practically it's materialism. Because a devotee, he doesn't see in that way. He sees it. He sees the soul. The spirit soul is one. The Supreme Personality of Godhead. He is manifested in samsa and vivinamsa expansions. The jivas are vivinamsa expansions. So every soul is God in the sense of being none different from God, because nothing, no one is different from God. So we don't see like this. We see all duality, differences, and this binds us. So every soul, every life, whether even Vishnu Tattva or Jiva soul, everything is expanded from God, as God's energy. So thus there are different potencies of the Supreme Lord, and there are different expansions of the different potencies. In this way, for different reasons, there are different expansions of the one same principle, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So everything is coming from Krishna. This understanding is real knowledge. But when the living entity is covered by upadhi, or designated body, he sees differences. Exactly as one sees differences in relation to oneself, of oneself, on water, on oil, or in a mirror. When something is reflected on the water, it appears to be moving. When it's reflected on ice, it appears fixed. But when it's reflected on oil, it appears hazy. The subject is one, but under different conditions, it appears differently. When the qualifying factor is taken away, the whole appears to be one. So one sees the oneness of all the items when the designations, that thing that causes the difference of quality, disappears, then one sees the oneness of everything. In other words, when one comes to the Paramahamsa or perfectional stage of life by practicing Bhakti Yoga, he sees only Krishna everywhere. For him there is no other objective. So this is how a devotee sees. He sees the oneness in diversity, and therefore Vairagya Vidya Nidra Bhakti Yoga. He sees everything is connected to Krishna. There is nowhere that he looks that he doesn't see Krishna. This is the exalted Paramahamsa platform. In conclusion, due to the different causes, the living entity is visible in different forms, as an animal, human being, demigod, tree, etc. Actually, every living entity is the marginal potency of the Supreme Lord. In Bhagavad Gita, therefore, it is explained that one who actually sees the spirit soul does not distinguish between a learned brahmana, a dog, an elephant, or a cow. Pandita Samadarshan. One who is actually learned sees only the living entity, not the outward covering. So this is true knowledge. But yet, and this is also explained in Kapila Muni's teachings, although someone who is on that platform, he doesn't see any difference even between a tiger and a brahmana, still he treats them differently. When he sees the brahmana, he maybe will embrace him. And when he sees the tiger, do you think he embraces him? No. So one who is actually learned sees only the living entity, not the outward covering. Differentiation is therefore the result of different karma or fruit of activities. And when we stop fruit of activities, turning them into acts of devotion, we can understand that we are not different from anyone else, regardless of the form. This is only possible in Krishna consciousness. In this movement, there are many different races of men from all parts of the world participating. But because they think of themselves as servants of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, they do not differentiate between black and white, yellow and red. The Krishna consciousness movement is therefore the only means to make the living entities free of all designations. So this is the true platform on which there can be unity in the world, the spiritual platform. But it takes very exalted consciousness and very exalted leadership. Otherwise, things very quickly descend to the platform of designations again. So we're hearing, but what the process is to remove this. All these designations, the entire body is based on material desires. And that is burnt when the devotional service is, the fire of devotional service is hot. Text 30. So what is it that stops us again from having that vision? From being Krishna conscious, what's stopping us? When one's mind and senses are attracted to sense objects for enjoyment, the mind becomes agitated. As a result of continually thinking of sense objects, one's real consciousness almost becomes lost, like the water in a lake that is gradually sucked up by the big grass straws on its bank. So we have consciousness. And that consciousness is naturally Krishna conscious. But instead of it being manifest in Krishna consciousness, it is sucked up. Our whole attention is sucked up by material desires. Because our consciousness, our mind is full of material desires, so it sucks up all our attention. Our whole abilities to awareness is taken up by these material desires, just like the water in a small lake is taken up by the grassy reeds and straw that surround the lake. I've seen those type of things. Here's Prabhupada's purport. So this stops us. Those material desires, rather than being our greatest friend, as we tend to treat them, it's our enemy, for it sucks up our Krishna consciousness. Our consciousness completely absorbs it in matter. And that's so dangerous. This is the point. So dangerous. Prabhupada's purport. In this verse, it is very nicely explained how our original Krishna consciousness becomes polluted and we gradually become almost completely forgetful of our relationship with the Supreme Lord. In the previous verse, it is recommended that we should always keep in touch with the devotional service of the Lord. How? How should we always keep in touch? By hearing. And so many things in the process, but hearing being the prime one. Wear the glories of the Lord like an ornament upon the ear. So we should always keep in touch with the devotional service of the Lord so that the blazing fire of devotional service can gradually burn to ashes material desires and we can become liberated from the repetition of birth and death. This is also how we can indirectly keep our staunch faith in the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. When the mind is allowed to think of sense gratification continuously, it becomes the cause of our material bondage. If our mind is simply filled with sense gratification, even though we want Krishna consciousness, by continuous practice, we cannot forget the subject matter of sense gratification. If one takes up the sannyas order of life but is not able to control the mind, he will think of objects of sense gratification, namely family, society, expensive house, etc. Even though he goes to the Himalayas or the forest, his mind will continue thinking of the objects of sense gratification. In this way, gradually one's intelligence will be affected. When intelligence is affected, one loses his original taste for Krishna consciousness. This example given here is very appropriate. If a big lake is covered all around by long kusha grass, just like columns, the waters dry up. Similarly, when the big columns of material desires increase, the clear water of consciousness is dried up. Therefore, these columns of kusha grass should be cut or thrown away from the very beginning. What is being thrown away then? The material desires. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has instructed that if from the very beginning we do not take care of the unwanted grass in the paddy field, the fertilizing agents or water will be used by them and the paddy plants will dry up. The material desire for sense enjoyment is the cause of our fall down in this material world, and thus we suffer the threefold miseries and continuous birth, death, old age and disease. However, if we turn our desires towards the transcendental loving service of the Lord, our desires become purified. We cannot kill our desires. We have to purify them of different designations. If we constantly think of being a member of a particular nation, society, or family, and continuously think about them, we become very strongly entangled in the conditioned life of birth and death. But if our desires are applied to the service of the Lord, they become purified, and thus we become immediately freed from material contamination. Text 31. When one deviates, so what is the result again? What is the cause of our not having pure consciousness? These material desires will suck up our consciousness. And what is the result of losing our natural consciousness? Text 31. When one deviates from his original consciousness, he loses the capacity to remember his previous position or recognize his present one. No one even recognizes. Not only don't we remember our position in relationship to Krishna, we're not even conscious of what it really means to be in our present condition. We don't recognize even the danger of it because our mind is so absorbed in imagining the pleasures that we will one day have. So when remembrance is lost, all knowledge acquired is based on a false foundation. When we forget Krishna and our relationship with Him, we identify with the material world, and then we build knowledge upon that, and the knowledge based on illusion is also false. And when this occurs, learned scholars consider that the soul is lost. He's lost. The greatest darkness or madness covered. The soul is lost means when his knowledge, when he doesn't exhibit his true nature, is considered like dead or like an animal. And everything that he does is performed in ignorance because the wealth of his actual consciousness has been lost. So this is how learned people see us. What was that story when someone asked Prabhupada, what was that in the airport? Anyone once told me this, that someone asked Prabhupada what he sees. He said, flapping dead bodies. All thinking that they're enjoying their life, although no one is really enjoying. So the soul is lost. There is no stronger, this is text 32, there's no stronger obstruction to one's self-interest. What is that going to be? There's nothing worse for us. No stronger obstacle to what's good for us than thinking other subject matters to be more pleasing than one's self-realization. For human society, constantly thinking of how to earn money and apply it for sense gratification brings about the destruction of everyone's interest. And this is all that's going on. This is what the school system teaches the students. Everything is to get a job. The economy is everything. Although we heard that obviously that even the king's prime duty is to make sure everyone is working, employed, is fed, etc. But everyone constantly thinking how to earn money and apply it for sense gratification. It brings about the destruction of everyone's interest. When one becomes devoid of knowledge and devotional service, he enters into species of life like those of trees and stones. Because his self is not acting. He's dead, he's lost to his actual nature, his actual activities. So therefore the law of nature punishes him, saying, okay, then this is suitable for you. You want to not act? Well, then be satisfied sucking up water through your feet, your roots and feet. So inactivity is the punishment for a soul like this. Prabhupada says about 2/3 of the way in the purport. If we do not properly execute our mission of life and self-realization, nature's punishment will render us inactive by putting us in the form of trees and hills. Therefore, if activities directed towards sense gratification are condemned herein, one who is constantly thinking of activities to earn money and gratify the senses is following a path which is suicidal. Factually, all human society is following this path. Some way or other, people are determined to earn money or get money by begging, borrowing, or stealing and applying that for sense gratification. Such a civilization is the greatest obstacle in the path of self-realization. Therefore, what conclusion should we reach from this? Therefore, those who strongly desire to cross the ocean of prescience must not associate with the modes of ignorance, for hedonistic activities are the greatest obstruction to realization of religious principles, economic development, regulated sense gratification, and at last liberation. So within this point is that one should follow Shastra. Even if one is not a pure devotee, there are Shastric elevating ways to get one's economic development, to enjoy sense gratification. But not, one should not act hedonistically. Because if one acts hedonistically, none of one's act will lead towards freedom from the material bondage and repeated birth and death, etc. Rather, one will become more entangled. Here's Prabhupada's purport. The four principles of life, let's talk about the common moksha, religious activity, material, satisfying one's material desires, economic development, and ultimate liberation. The four principles of life allow one to live according to religious principles, to earn money according to one's position in society, to allow the senses to enjoy the sense objects according to regulations, and to progress along the path of liberation from this material attachment. As long as the body is there, it is not possible to become completely free from all these material interests. It is not, however, recommended that one act only for sense gratification and earn money for that purpose only, sacrificing all religious principles. At the present moment, human civilization does not care for religious principles. It is, however, greatly interested in economic development without religious principles. For instance, in a slaughterhouse, the butchers certainly get money easily. But such business is not based on religious principles. Similarly, there are many nightclubs for sense gratification and brothels for sex. Sex, of course, is allowed in married life, prostitution is prohibited because all our activities are ultimately aimed at liberation, at freedom from the clutches of material existence. Similarly, although the government may license liquor shops, this does not mean that liquor shops should be opened unrestrictedly and illicit liquor smuggled. Licensing is meant for restricting. No one has to take a license for sugar, wheat, or milk because there is no need to restrict these things. In other words, it is advised that one not act in a way that will obstruct the regular process of advancement of spiritual life and liberation. The Vedic process of sense gratification is therefore planned in such a way that one can economically develop and enjoy sense gratification and yet ultimately attain liberation. Of course, the purpose of these is not anything but liberation, but yet it is practical, so one can have one's cake, so to speak, and eat it too. And gradually, as one becomes purified, one gains a greater taste and a greater attachment to Krishna, and naturally one's detachment from fulfilling one's material desires increases, the detachment increases. So Vedic civilization offers us knowledge in the Shastras, and if we live a regulated life under the direction of Shastras and Guru, all our material desires will be fulfilled. At the same time, we will be able to go forward to liberation. So, in other words, we in true culture, in Vedic culture, one lives his life in the perspective of liberation. He lives his life in the perspective knowing that he's going to die. Not hiding from it, not making the foolish attempt to run from it, but living his life as he is, without bluffing, not having to pretend, but live it in the perspective that I wish to become liberated, that that's the purpose of life. So the other items, even the sense gratification, wealth, and religiosity. Out of those, liberation is really what is to be taken seriously, the next verse says. Why? Because those things, the other things, even religious activity and sense gratification and one's wealth, they are subject to destruction by the stringent laws of nature, by death. So therefore, one knows this. One should be aware of this and live one's life realistically that he makes progress, from Prabhupada's purport. Liberation, moksha, is stressed in this verse. The other three items are material and therefore subject to destruction. Even if somehow we accumulate a great bank balance in this life and possess many material things, everything will be finished with death. In Bhagavad Gita, it is said that death is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who ultimately takes away everything acquired by the materialistic person. Foolishly, we do not care for this. Foolishly, we are not afraid of death. Nor do we consider that death will take away everything acquired by the process of Dharma, Artha, and Kama. By Dharma or pious activities, we may be elevated to the heavenly planets, but this does not mean freedom from the clutches of birth, death, old age, and disease. The purport is that we can sacrifice our interest in Trivargya, religious principles, economic development, and sense gratification. We cannot sacrifice the cause of liberation. The conclusion, later on in the purport, is that we should not stress pious activities, economic development, and sense gratification, but we should concern ourselves with approaching Lord Vishnu in his spiritual planets, of which the topmost is Golok Vrindavan, where Lord Krishna lives. Therefore, this Krishna consciousness movement is the greatest gift for persons who are actually desiring liberation. So what is truly the blessings from Krishna? What is is Krishna trying to act? What does he want for us? We've heard what we shouldn't do and how we should take to, even if we are materialistic, we should take to our materialism in such a way that we, it is in the perspective of ultimately gaining liberation. But what does Krishna actually want? We accept as blessings different states of higher life, distinguishing them from lower states of life. But we should know that such distinctions exist only in relation to the interchange of the modes of material nature. So is it better to be the bank clerk, the teller, or the bank manager? Doesn't make any difference, really. Even though the person who's the teller is ambitiously trying to make his way to the very top. But it's all so temporary, like the twinkling of an eye. If someone said to you, you can be the president of the United States, we think, oh, maybe that's wonderful. But you could only be that for an eye blink. And then you think, what's the use? You won't even take five steps if it's only going to be for in that direction, if it's only going to give you that gratification for an eye blink. And that's all anything really is in the perspective of liberation. So we should know that such distinctions only exist in relationship to the interchange of the modes of material nature. Actually, these states of life, all the different good and bad in the material world, this is a good situation, he has such a nice house, he has such a nice car, all of them will be destroyed by the Supreme Controller because none have a permanent existence. So really, what Prabhupada, sometimes even to our dismay, stresses only is that which is eternal. Because as soon as he said, okay, the verse said, okay, keep your sense gratification and religiosity and what getting wealth in the perspective of eternity. You can do this, but don't do it in a hedonistic way. And then the next verse 40 takes it away and says, we don't care about these things. We sacrifice these things all for liberation, for the eternal. For the eternal, tasting that sweetness. Everything else will be destroyed. All karma, good and bad, is temporary. It's interesting when we note that, but we're seeing how we're in a bad situation, we see others in a bad situation, and actually we feel bad when we see others suffering. But also, that's temporary. The bad is temporary, as the good is temporary. So, therefore, Sanat Kumar concluded that we shouldn't pay either very much attention. Tums the Tikshastra, and they go back and forth like the waves of the river or the ocean. Let's see if we can read one more. The purports, and these are very, in this section, are very long. Powerful, very important. Text 36. We read the verse that here's. We'll read some of the purport. Although we elevate ourselves to the highest planetary system by the scientific advancement of knowledge, or by the religious principles of life, great sacrifice and fruit of activities, at the time of dissolution, these higher planetary systems and life on them will be destroyed. In this verse, the word Isha Vivam Sitas Isham indicates that all such blessings will be destroyed by the Supreme Controller. So what blessings do we actually want? And it's good to decide upon that and fix our mind upon that. No one, we will not be protected when the destruction comes. Our bodies, either in this planet or in another planet, will be destroyed. And again, we will have to remain for millions of years in an unconscious state within the body of Mahavishnu. And again, when the creation is manifest, we have to take birth in different species of life and begin our activities. Therefore, we should not be satisfied simply by a promotion to the higher planetary systems. We should try to get out of the material cosmic manifestation, go to the spiritual world and take shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This is our highest achievement. We should not be attracted by anything material, higher or lower. but should consider them all on the same level. Our real engagement should be inquiring about the real purpose of life and rendering devotional service to the Lord. Thus, we will be eternally blessed in our spiritual activities, full of knowledge and bliss. So this is called fixed up, nishtha, serious. When religion, economic development, and sense gratification are adjusted, liberation from this material world, old age, and disease is assured. In the present age of Kali, however, there is no question of religion and liberation. People have taken interest only in economic development and sense gratification. So it's, even when Prabhupada wrote this, which was probably in the early 70s, 25 years later, a little more than that even, how much more intensely this is true, how things have progressed so much. Then there was a sense of duty in the world. People did things because it was the right thing to do, but now the right thing to do is just take care of yourself. And it's all over the world. Dealings in human society have become almost animalistic. When everything becomes grossly animalistic, dissolution takes place. This dissolution is to be accepted as Isha Vidam Vidvam Sita Isam. The Lord's so-called blessings of economic development and sense gratification will be conclusively dissolved by destruction. At the end of this Kali Yuga, the Lord will appear as the incarnation of Kalki, and his only business will be to kill all human beings on the surface of the globe. After that killing, another golden age will begin. We should therefore know that our material activities are just like childish play. Children may play on the beach, and the father will sit and watch his childish play. The construction of buildings with sand, the construction of walls, and so many other things. But finally, the father will ask the children to come home. Then everything is destroyed. Persons who are too much addicted to the childish activities of economic development and sense gratification are sometimes especially favored by the Lord when he destroys their construction of these things. This is really wonderfully described in the 11th canto by Pingala, a prostitute, who she understood, and also in the Aila Gita, when they understood that disappointment leads to detachment, and detachment leads to happiness and taking shelter of Krishna. And you can imagine when a child builds some sandcastle, he spends all day building a sandcastle. So one out of two things usually happens. The tide comes out. Well, what happens if the father says, now it's time to go? What will the child 99% of the time do before he goes? What will he do?
Jump.
What?
Jump.
Jump on it and break it, right? Then, okay, at least I broke it myself. But what happens before that happens?
He cries.
What happens if the tide comes out and the water comes and destroys it? What happens? Have you ever been in one of those situations? What do you feel?
Terrible.
Yeah, for a few moments you feel it really, that attachment, it hurts, but then very quickly you forget about it because after all it wasn't really yours. You adjust very quickly. So when Krishna does it, takes everything away, you make more advancement than when you jump on it yourself and destroy it. So therefore, because then you say, oh, then you realize, anyway, who cares? Was it mine? I'm going to have it. And it had to be, it's going to be destroyed by the ocean anyway or whatever. It is said by the Lord, therefore, the Lord sometimes destroys the constructions of these things. It is said by the Lord, Yasyaham Anugraham Hi Harisha Tadaram Sarai. The Lord told Yudhisthira Maharaj that his special favor is shown to his devotees when he takes away all the devotees' material opulences. You don't feel like saying, thank you, Krishna, when he does it, until way later, then you thank Krishna later. When he's doing it, you feel just like the child first, who's the ocean waves have destroyed, first of that feeling of misery. Generally, therefore, it's experienced that Vaishnavas are not very opulent in the material sense. When a Vaishnava, a pure devotee, tries to be material opulent and at the same time desires to serve the Supreme Lord, his devotional service is checked. The Lord, in order to show him a special favor, destroys his so-called economic development and material opulence. Thus the devotee, being frustrated in his repeated attempts at economic development, ultimately takes solid shelter under the lotus feet of the Lord. This kind of action may also be accepted as Isha Vidvam Sita Isam, whereby the Lord destroys one's material opulence, but enriches one in spiritual understanding. In the course of our preaching work, we sometimes see that materialistic persons come to us and offer their obeisances to take blessings, which means they want more and more material opulences. If such material opulences are checked, such persons are no longer interested in offering obeisances to the devotees. Such materialistic persons are always concerned about their economic development. They offer obeisances to saintly persons or the Supreme Lord and give something in charity for preaching work with a view that they will be rewarded with further economic development. However, when one is sincere in his devotional service, the Lord obliges the devotee to give up his material development and completely surrender unto him. Because the Lord does not give blessings of material opulence to his devotees, people are afraid of worshipping Lord Vishnu because they see that the Vaishnavas, who are worshippers of Lord Vishnu, are poor in superficial material opulences. And towards the end, the Lord does not bestow material blessings upon the devotees, for they may be entrapped again in this material world by continuous birth, death, old age, and disease. Due to materialistic opulences, persons like Ravana become puffed up with sense gratification. Ravana even dared kidnap Sita, who is both the wife of Lord Ramachandra and the goddess of fortune, thinking that he would be able to enjoy the pleasure potency of the Lord. But actually, by such action, Ravana became vidvamsita, or ruined. At the present moment, human civilization is too much attached to economic development and sense gratification, and is therefore nearing the path of ruination. Okay, we'll stop here. And there's I think, three more, one, two, three, four more verses in this section, up to 40, which everything is concluded. Because some parts of this have sounded almost jnani, almost jnani-like. Actually, the devotees are neither averse to the material world nor attached to the material world. Neither averse nor attached. Rather, they see everything as Krishna's. So, material wealth, if Krishna sends it, they see as Krishna's, not as their own. And if Krishna keeps them poor, they see that as Krishna's arrangement. So, in either case, neutral. In fact, the story of Sudama Brahmana teaches us that Krishna gave Sudama Brahmana wealth at the end. Why? Because he was averse to the material world. And instead, for his devotion, he needed to be neutral. Neutral, seeing everything as Krishna's and using everything in Krishna's service. Vairagya vidya nitya bhakti yoga shiksha pameka prusha pranasa krishna chaitanya sarira dari kripam buddhiris tamaham. Okay, we'll stop here. Tomorrow, 37. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Oh yes, tomorrow is today's the 9th, tomorrow's the 10th, and it's a very auspicious day. It's Vishant Panchami, the first day of spring. on this day, Krishna held the Shank Rasalila, which is a very intimate Rasalila. And also in Vrindavan, the deities always dress in yellow on the Shank Panchami, and everyone brings these little fruit, these badris, or bear, as they call them. They have them where you are from, the bear fruit.
Hi.
What do they call them?
I know the name in Telugu.
What is it in Telugu?
Ladi.
Yeah. What do you call them?
Bear.
Also.
And they throw
them at the deities, everyone offers them to the deities. But it's a very happy day. And it's also the coldest weather is over, so that's another reason why everyone is happy. It only gets warmer. And tomorrow is also the appearance day of Srimati Vishnupriya Devi, the wife of Mahaprabhu. And also it's Saraswati Puja begins. And also it's the disappearance day of Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. And appearance day of Pundarik Vidyanidhi, of Raghunanda Thakur. And the appearance day of Srila Raghunath Das Goswami. So it's a very auspicious day. So because it's Vishwanath Panchami, we thought that Lakshmini's Gopinath deity will come. So everyone should bring their fruit. Okay. Okay. And anyway, if you did bring them, you couldn't throw them at him because he's too little. But bring something for Gopinath. So the Shantras took place at Govardhan, yes? That's the one at Chandrasarov, I think.
Yeah. In 96.
Some
about 80,000 people went through
Prabhupada's
life on
that day. Wow. 80,000 people. Too many people. Too many. So many. Did you want to say something? Okay. So tomorrow, Gopinath. Srimad Bhagavatam, Maharaj ki jai, Chatisana ki jai, Shri Prabhupada ki jai.